Hello, welcome once again to the Candid Cast. We are continuing our series of Zero to Hero. It's a session where I interview notable Nigerians that have been of impact to myself in particular and to the Nigerian community in general. People who have, in their own right, paved their way and moved themselves from zero to hero. Their life will be of tremendous influence and impact to upcoming persons. Before I introduce my guest today, please, if you are not a subscriber to Candid Cast, do click the notification button right now, subscribe, and share our video to as many people as are in your contact. We are available on YouTube, we are on Facebook, we are on Instagram and other social media platforms. Today, I have with me Mr. Johnson Tenny Farumoju. He's a seasoned economist, a banker, a stockbroker, an industrialist, a farmer, a philanthropist who has invested his life through the Tenny Farumoju Foundation in the award of scholarship to over 1,000 students since 2014. He's the chairman and founder of the Fortright Group of Companies, where you have Fortright Securities, Fortright Real Estate, Fortright Manufacturing, Fortright Agriculture, among others. He has been of tremendous impact. Thank you for so much that you have done for Nigeria and for humanity and for God. You are welcome to the studio today. It's our pleasure to have you. You are welcome, sir.
Thank you very much for inviting me to this platform. It's a pleasure to be here. I want to first to thank you for creating this platform of engaging.
Thank you, sir.
I know that I've been a fan since you started, and I have seen the impact of what is being transferred on this platform, and then the conversation that has taken place has been a benefit to me, and I know there are quite a number of people that are also subscribing or looking at this platform. It is my expectation that it would have been a blessing to them. They would have gotten something here that would have add premium to their lives. So thank you for inviting me. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
You're welcome, sir.
Thank you.
Sir, the first question I want to take is, I want you to tell our audience about your early life, because you just, last year you celebrated your 70th birthday.
Yeah.
And people talk of good old days. Want to see how good was the old days. Let's know here about your early life. Yes.
Okay, well, I really don't know about the rosy old good days. But what I know, I was born pre-independent. Started schooling post-independent in the Western region.
Okay.
We have the privilege of having free education at the primary level. But as you know, that was short-lived. I think by 1966, we have the intervention of the military.
Yeah.
That changes the whole characterization of what we call the benefit of the early independent years.
Okay.
I grew up during this period, and then, well, for us as young people, we don't feel nothing. We enjoy, I think in the 60s, 1960, I think we went to school at rice free, all manners of things. And then the school, we don't pay school fees. No fees were paid. And I believe that government was responsible for providing education then. But I can't talk seriously of our parents. Because I know that in the Western region then, tax is a must. You must pay taxes to government. It's a must. Either you're a farmer, you have to have your 3 years
tax clearance
attached to your belt when you go to the farm. So for us as children, of course, yes, we enjoyed it, but I can't speak for our parents who probably were made to pay tax on what they do. So, but bear light, I think, was the euphoria of being independent is something that was communicated to us, and then we feel it was good. Maybe perhaps this is what people are referring the old good days. But that is to the extent we enjoyed it up to 1966, when that democracy was interrupted.
Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you.
I think even today, through the universal basic education, primary education is still largely free in Nigeria across states. So it does not speak of those days better than this, if it is just the free education.
Yeah.
And the taxes that people talk about. So people have always paid tax, even pre-independence. I recall the Aba riot and the riot in Abeokuta over taxation. Even women were paying taxes at that time, market women. Okay. Then I listened to Professor Tomori give a speech on how difficult it was to even access primary education at a point in his life. And I recall in his book, My Watch, President Olusegun Obasanjo also mentioned the difficulty he had entering primary school. Contrary to what we see today. What was your own experience about admission to school? Just your schooling generally, were you on scholarship? Were your parents very rich? Yeah. What supports did you enjoy?
I can understand those who live pre-independent. They paid a lot of, apart from how to be grown up before you go to school, you heard that you have to use your hand to touch your ear before you are admitted to show that you are matured enough to be in school. And our parents have to look for money to pay for school. And then some had to stop. Some were not have the privilege to go to school because they needed to pay the teachers. They needed to pray for infrastructure in school. Those are the things that happened before the independence. But after the independence, it was a little easier. We could go to school. The government that came, then, you know, if you have been under a bondage and you're free, we tend to be more compassionate to our people. I think the government came in and introduced what we call the welfare state. You know, we take care of our people. We enjoyed it, just as I saying, we enjoyed it, some of us. We enjoyed it early from primary. But in secondary school then, you need to pay some amount of money. In my case, I went to a secondary school that I need to pay school fees. I need to buy my books. What we weren't paying, I'm not too sure then who pays the teachers, but I'm sure that the teachers then in the Western regions were getting subvention to run the schools, those schools. But my parents paid for my secondary school education. And you dare go to school then, if you are not able to, if your parents cannot sponsor you, you probably go and learn the trade, and not the school is not meant for you, because if your parents can't pay, no access, you can't really get there. We grew up that, and I think that it's when the military intervened in 1966, the idea of everything free was not that free any longer.
Aborted.
So we got to a situation where our parents are made to take care of for us. And but it was good. You know, there's a pressure placed on you then as a small child to come into limelight quickly, and then be able to make fulfill the dreams of your parents also.
Okay. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you.
Still on your education.
Yeah.
You proceeded after that secondary education to the university. Was it by scholarship? Was it support of parents? How did you get university education?
Okay. Well, for my own, I really didn't go to a former university. When I left the secondary school, I I felt, you know, that my parents were carrying a lot of burdens. We have three of my siblings, my younger ones, and I needed to, I know how hard they were able to pay my fees.
In secondary school.
So I got a job immediately after secondary school, and I felt that I needed to help, you know, to carry the burden of my older two younger brothers.
Okay.
My elder sisters were not privileged to start school, go to a secondary school. I think they went into trade and that stuff. But my junior ones, I had myself accountable to be able to provide for them.
So that how old were you at this time?
At the time, maybe about 19.
At 19, you were looking about to sponsor your younger ones.
I sponsored my immediate from two then to the last year in the secondary school. At that time, that's a waste of 5 years. I had to stay not proceeding, couldn't go to nowhere. And then I already settled to the fact that I'm not going to go for further education. Because I wanted them to see them through. So the first one, 5 years thereafter, became, because I intervened at the second year level, I paid the school fees. So I had to wait until he graduates from the secondary school, got a job, and then before I can think about about myself. That time I felt, you know, I felt that like maybe I felt that I've lost so much ground, haven't let go, and I couldn't proceed. So most of the people that are, maybe they're junior in secondary school, already got to the university. And then I felt something happened. So I was inventing, how can I just catch up? So I now route to the route of study banking. To do a professional qualification. Then because I work in the bank, if you get qualified then as a banker, it takes you to become a manager in the bank. You are qualified as a professional banker. You become a manager. So I looked at that gap of 5 years wasted that I didn't go to school, and I felt that, okay, what can I do to circumvent the road? I mean, cut the road. So I just, okay, let me go and for the professional qualification in banking. That will take me to become a manager. So the lost grounds will be covered. And that's what I did. So I felt, okay, where's the best way to go? England then was instead of bankers, England, if you qualify, have the associate qualification, you get employed both in the UK or in Nigeria. You get it that is professionally, that is valued both in Nigeria and the UK. So I felt, I went for that, and luckily for me, within 2-3 years, I've done it. And then I came back to Nigeria and then did my service after that qualification. So it was a strategic move in order to gain lost years that I made that didn't allow, I mean, the years of taking burden of my junior ones going to the formal university. I went through that route, and I made some good success out of it. So.
Thank you very much, sir. So much of good moves in teenage years. By the time you were in England, you must have had access to telephone at the time. It means that it is not today that they started getting more facilities or amenities than us.
No.
But you chose to return to a country that had no telephone and no hope of telephone. Today, I hear communication minister said that the Nigerians believe that telephone is now more important than food.
Because
you can do
more data.
You can do 30 days food fast, 6 a.m. to 6 p.m., no food.
Yeah.
But you can't do a day 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. without phone.
People
will revolt. So how did it feel like Okay. Returning, thinking of returning to Nigeria, thinking of the amenities you will leave, all the comfort of England to return to Nigeria.
I think that's an interesting thing. A lot of people asked me that question, even my colleagues that we were, what was the motivation? I recall maybe when I went to renew my passport in England, and then after I requested that I needed just 4 months to stay. And I think the interviewer, I'll take a look at it. You know, it's unusual then, a student. Uh-huh. And then you apply for 4 months instead of applying for the normal stay of one. The lady was a bit to be surprised. And I say, why are you saying for these 4 months? And I say, after my exams, I'm going back to Nigeria. See, I mean, he was curious. I think it's not something that is familiar with. And then he left the interview, you know, the interview cage, and went into a place where he can see me visibly. He drew me once and said, look, is there any problem that you're having here? I said, no. He said, is anybody offending you here? I said, no. Are you going through some stuff that you can talk to me? And I said, no, I'm not, because I want to go back. He was like, he went back in and stamped my passport and gave me 1 year to stay. Okay? And I asked for only 4 months. So he gave me, but I didn't change my mind. And the thing is, those are the things that he held me as a Nigerian hold so fast. The country you went into, some people developed it.
Yeah.
It's not maybe a spirit from heaven. And I felt that the country where I am then, people there, citizens or not, developed the place. And I felt that I felt deeply as a Nigerian that I needed to be here and I will make more valuable contribution than I have had
made. In your own country.
So, and that's one of the things. And to today, that was he hold it so, so deeply rooted in me that we are the one to develop our nation. If we fail to do that, we failed an existence. That's the way I look at it. That's how hard I hold it, that I felt you didn't fulfill if you are not committed to developing the nation, because it's a trust put on you at the time God manifests you here to add, replenish the earth, make it better than what you make it. And I don't think there's anywhere you are more challenged than here, than the area that is already developed. So I held myself accountable to that, and today is still that motivation. I'll do 10 times, I'll do 20 times if I had the opportunity to continue to choose Nigeria, I would choose it. That is for me, irrespective of whatever has happened. It's sold and completely sold to the development of the country.
Thank you very much, sir. I think you have literally answered the next question I wanted to ask you, was what advice you would give to your younger self if you know what you know now, that you have told us that the decision would not have
changed.
Like the Bible says every house is built by someone.
Yeah.
There is no house that is an accident.
No.
It's deliberate. No. So if we are going to get a good country,
we must
take our space to build it. What role did mentors and role models play in your life?
Yeah, they're very significant. When I was preparing as a young guy, that 19, when I was struggling to go to travel out, I wasn't like, had a lot of conversation, people guiding me, you understand me? It was another story, the way I got out of the country. I went through the student process. Legitimately being in England, but was just the whole idea on my head alone. But when I came back, privileged to work in a stockbroking outfit, I met a more valuable, today valuable to me, is late now, who was those words that he spoke to me are like gold, and they are still relevant today. The man is a customs officer. He's from the eastern part of Nigeria, and then I was the one attending to him when he wants to buy shares. I recalled one day he just asked me, he said, young man, are you married? I said, no, I was not married then. So, okay. And he just left. He didn't say nothing like that. The other time he came, he just asked me, when you marry, you don't have many kids. He didn't say nothing. I left. The third time he will come, he said, start saving for your retirement now.
As a bachelor?
Yeah. Start saving for your retirement now. You know, and, you know, I just heard, what is this man talking about? Because I can't make a sense of what he's talking at all. After a while, he called me when he came and said, young man, I've been asking you to do something. You never asked me why. And I said, I'll help you, sir. He said, no. Well, you're supposed, if you help me, you should ask me why. So he took me through. I see he had kids. He trained them to the university, and then they are relocated. They are in America. The three of them are in America now. And the closest, they're doing well, and they want him to relocate, and they say he can leave Nigeria. I say the closest is to them is during the Christmas day, when they gather and they say, oh, hello, Dad, good. Unfortunately, it's not their mother early in life. Okay. He said that he was one who mentored them, and they say, oh, hi. They gather every Christmas day, and then they sing Have a Christmas Together. He said that's the closest that they to these children. And that, and so he said the reason why I should not have so many children. So you carry the burden, and you may not be in pleasure. And then he talked about retirement.
Yeah.
He said, start today to save.
Wow.
When you get old, you find that you become lonely. And it is those things you put aside over a period of time that will sustain you, that make your life relevant. And it is, there's no better time than to start the journey of a lifetime than now. That fundamentally changed everything about my life. I have imbibed the act of savings, keeping my money since before I got married. Out today, we're talking of close to about 40 years.
Yeah.
You understand me? And that's continually. There had not been any month that would not put a part of what I earn aside or reinvest it and use it. And that had paid up significantly. For me, it's just a lot of, I mean, that comment, was significant for whatever I am today. It has helped, and I hope, and that's why you see, growing up, I mean, developing all these things, I use whatever avenue that I have to tell people that you need to save for the rainy day. You need to save. You have to do that. Once you do that, you become the cultured, the family who is a saver. And then investing. And that's why you see that what I got from somebody who mentored me. And today I still also talk to other people exact what he told me. And I'm telling today I still do that. And that practice is still with me and has paid up significantly. And I've become some of the things sustainer of my life.
Thank you very much, sir. It's been so wonderful learning from you, and I believe our audience, what our guest today got from his mentor, you are also receiving today, and it will guide you through so that even after the age of 70, you can still share testimonies of what you have heard today that saved your life from regrets.
Okay.
We appreciate you for coming. This is where we draw the curtain on the Candid Cast today. And for our audience, thank you for staying tuned. Until we meet again, God bless you.
Thanks for listening. Stay tuned for more exciting episodes ahead.
We appreciate your support and can't wait to share more insights with you soon.